Paul Clement must have woken up on a Saturday morning many times this season wondering if it may be his last as Reading manager, but a 3-2 win over Bristol City on Saturday ensured that he'll stay in the Mad Stad dugout for at least another week, as the Royals claimed a rollercoaster victory but remained stuck in the Championship relegation zone. Welcome to episode 174 of the Tyler Sen Podcast with your host Mark Mayer, as always, and joining me this weekend on a Sunday night recording. We've been a little bit sloppy over the last couple of weeks, Tuesday night recordings, but Sunday night today to get you straight into the week with your Tyler Sen Reading FC dosage is Simeon Pickup, aka Bucks Royal. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, and kind of a mixed mood at the moment, having seen Reading claim a very good win, but to see us still in the bottom three is a little bit of an awkward one to take, shall we say.
It feels like that's going to be something of a theme, that we win and yet stay in the relegation zone. So we'll cover that in the recap, obviously, and then in pub, we're going to have a pub chat bit later on, talking about the Championship in general and Reading's place in it, obviously. Then we'll have the mailbag and any other business to come. And before we do that, just a quick thank you to all those who continue to donate to our Patreon campaign, which is our virtual tip jar to go get just any sort of feedback and everything we're always thankful for. But those guys who put into the Patreon campaign are our favourites of the favourites, and they do a really good job in helping us to cover the games and help us to get in the little extras to make sure we can deliver that back to you as content on the website and in the podcast. So let's get back into the recap.
The Tylehurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Well, as we said, we're still in the relegation zone, Sim, so this is a nice win, but it kind of has its limits to how happy we can really be about it. It's kind of a bit of a, I don't know how to describe it, it just reminds you quite clearly that this season is going to be one of those seasons that just kind of takes a long time to get into. And you know, 3-2 win is nice, but that relegation zone factor is kind of damaging.
Yeah, absolutely. Our form's just so stop-start at the moment. We'll put in the odd decent performance, get the odd win, like that Millwall game a couple of weeks ago, but it's just, we're not building anything up at the moment. We're not getting any momentum at all. If we put together a couple of decent performances, that's automatically, or very quickly rather, just undercut by another couple of poor performances just after that. So it's frustrating at the moment. But having Ipswich coming up next week, that's a good chance to hopefully get back-to-back wins and see if we can push out the relegation zone.
It seems to me like that the win over Bristol, it's kind of a weird one to judge, but at the very least, I think that the people who went home from the Mad Stad on Saturday did go home relatively entertained, and our match report was on the website, it's called That's Clemtertainment, and he's kind of building up his own sort of brand of thing, football games that you can watch and be entertained by, but kind of in the same way that you're entertained by watching a child bake a cake, because you know that there's quite a lot of it's going wrong and you just kind of have to accept that and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, exactly, and I'd just like to apologise for that awful pun that I put on the website, That's Clemtertainment, but it is quite apt. It's becoming the very Paul Clement kind of thing, that if we do win, it won't be in a particularly comfortable kind of way. I know the Hull City game was a bit of an exception, but typically when we have won, whether it was the two games that we won at the end of last season under him or the couple of wins we've had this season, it's tended to be us somehow managing to edge ourselves just in front and then having a really tough, strong rearguard action in the closing stages of the game to just get ourselves over the line and just about get there. That's what we had yesterday against Bristol City. We've had it kind of similar with the Millwall game and the two last season as well. So I guess that's a good thing that we're kind of building up that habit of being able to see out in certain games at home.
It did seem to me like the most typical Reading thing ever at the moment, that we scored a pretty, very decent goal right on the edge of half time. And I'm not sure how many minutes of stoppage time there were, but how we found the time to concede again in the first half and end up 2-2. That equaliser that Bristol City scored, it was Reading's defence was completely at sea. It felt like we were caving into a Manchester City team after 94 minutes of pressure. And that shows that when the push comes to shove for Reading, still not a very good football team.
Well, it's certainly a team problem. I don't think you can put it down to any individual player in that second equaliser. We've got a couple of different chances to clear the ball and to clear the danger, but for some reason, no player takes responsibility. No one really takes their opportunity to just get the ball out of the danger area. Andy Yeardom has a couple of chances to stop crosses coming into the box. Tyler Blackett should be stronger at the far post when the Bristol City player just tucks it in for the goal. But that's something that Paul Clement has to work on the training ground, not just in terms of organisation, but in getting them motivated as well. It's not something you can just point at one individual player and say, this is where you've messed up. It's a problem for various different players. And when that's happening, it's something that has to go back to the manager, that's something that has to really be looked at across the entire season as well, because we've been making these errors, conceding these kind of goals too often this season, and it's not something that can just be put down to Saturday's game. It's something that really has to get rooted out. And I know Paul Clement said after the game that we let ourselves down with these kind of goals, that we concede these sloppy goals and kind of hold ourselves back and don't pick up as many points because of it. But this problem has been going on too long, and it's something that he has to sort out. Or if he can't sort it out, then it's really going to keep his job in pretty hot water.
I'm not sure if it's a sort of job that many championship level managers can sort out. Sadly, it seems to be something ingrained in the squad. I did think actually for the first goal, Moore and O'Shea were kind of didn't really have their man. Basically, their marking game was a bit sloppy in the first goal, and I do kind of wonder if Liam Moore and John O'Shea is the way forward. Obviously, Thiago Eloy's had a decent-ish start to the season, but do you think that those two, Moore and O'Shea, they're decent, I think, for a couple of games, but the slog of the championship, obviously O'Shea is an impeccably fit, I think, player for his age, you know, but I'm not sure how those two are going to be able to do long-term. It seems to me like clubs watching video footage of Liam Moore and John O'Shea together are going to be able to pick out bits to exploit out of their game.
Yeah, it's not perfect, and certainly in the long term, it's not something you want to be relying on for longer than you would want to. But when you have someone like John O'Shea in the side, you've got someone who's very experienced, who knows how to deal with tough scenarios. And I know for the first goal, O'Shea and Moore kind of caught a little bit in no man's land when the ball has just slid through for Pack to get the first equaliser. But then again, you can look at the end of the game and look at how John O'Shea's experience really showed, just heading any ball away that came anywhere near him. You just clear it down the other end of the pitch very effectively. And you need someone like that in your back four. You think back to, say, the 2011-12 season when we had experience from Gawkes and Hart in there, Valori being out the side for a little bit, and maybe that can just raise his game a little bit. Because I think what it is, individually, I like Liam Moore and I like Thiago Eloy, but neither of them are so experienced, so proactive, so dominating in their defensive style. Neither of them are really kind of experienced. They're going to sort everything out when things start going against the team. We need someone to really kind of stand up and be counted and make those clearances like O'Shea does, or just keep things simple, weather a storm when a team is sending loads of crosses into the box, that kind of thing. But having someone like O'Shea does give you that.
Yeah, there's a lot of advantages to his experience. And I think Reading, at times this season, have certainly lacked experience. That's one of the things that you can certainly say about our mentality. Now, looking at the other end of the pitch, I was quite impressed by the poacher's finish from Yaku Mate for the first goal. And that second goal, I sort of alluded to earlier, Liam Kelly, absolutely brilliant strike. And I find it really interesting how, with Andy Rinnem-Hotter coming into the team, we'll talk about him in a second, it was Liam Kelly, not John Swift, who stayed in the side. And I think it's quite interesting how he's the one who's managed to stay in the team above Swift, who I'd say Swift is probably more a naturally gifted footballer, better sort of vision, and both of their techniques are brilliant. But Swift, at the start of the season at least, was the one who I thought you'd say, well, he'll be in the team, we'll invest our time in playing him, and that'll work out a lot better than putting Liam Kelly in. But it's a big confidence booster for him, and Kelly, you probably would say, he's a confidence player as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I found really interesting about Kelly on Saturday is that he wasn't played in his usual kind of slightly more advanced role that he has been under Paul Clement. He was kind of brought back to that deep line kind of quarterback role that he played on played at under Yap Stam in his first season, just kind of sitting in front of the back four, picking the ball up and picking passes, which is perhaps something that he's a little bit more better suited to, I guess, finding those deep pockets of space and then moving the ball around. I know he's not very strong, he's not very physically imposing, he's certainly not going to win those headers that come anywhere near him, but he does have that knack of just being in the right place at the right time when he's defending, just being able to nick the ball away from other players, being able to put in those niggly little fouls that that disrupt the opposition's rhythm. Very different to what you'd get from, say, Saïd Ezzetlahi, but he seemed to enjoy it on Saturday. He seemed to like going back into that kind of that withdrawn role, allowing Bakun and Rinnemhota to get forward a little bit more. And so you look at our third goal on the day, Bakuna being able to push forward, get into the box and have a shot at goal himself. He wouldn't be able to do that if he was in that kind of defensive role that he has been in the last couple of weeks. So I guess credit to Paul Clement for changing things around in that midfield three, bringing in Rinnemhota, who had a very good full league debut, Bakuna getting the goal and Kelly getting a really good goal as well. Certainly seemed to thrive off that confidence, as you say.
Yeah, also into the team on Saturday was Mo Barrow and Sam Walker. They were back in. Wonder what you think about their performances. But Rinnemhota, Paul Clement has been speaking quite highly of him in the media after the game. His third league appearance, he's been on the bench and not really, when he's come off the bench, not really had any time to impress. But Rinnemhota is one of those. I think he's, when I've seen him play previously, sort of in the League Cup and occasionally youth level, seems like he's got at least a role in this team that he can come in and play. Obviously, as I said, he's injured and we're not too sure that he's going to be back anytime soon. So there's a spot for Rinnemhota, and that's why these academy players are very useful and the club have to make use of them, because you don't always have your first team players available, and you shouldn't be, if you lose, you know, your three central defensive mids and you've got one kid coming through, you shouldn't be shoehorning in someone who's not a central defensive mid into that position, because it upsets the balance of the team. And at least Rinnemhota knows that role inside out, and it sounds like he had a pretty decent full debut.
Yeah, very composed, very confident, didn't do anything too kind of overly elaborate, he didn't go for spectacular at all, but you don't want that on a full league debut. You just want him to keep it simple, keep it tidy, make his passes, make his tackles, and he did that very well, to his credit. And I don't see any reason why he can't stay in the team, to be honest, because John Swift's kind of been up and down, Liam Kelly's been up and down. No midfielders really kind of properly made their case to be in the team every week. And certainly with David Myler out, I think he's fit, but he's just not getting picked even for the bench at the moment. Ezzetlahi injured as well. There's no reason why Rinnemhota can't stay in for Ipswich. If he can put in a good performance there, then hopefully keep going off the international break as well.
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting one to keep an eye on. And well, I mean, that's the game itself. Is this type of thing that we can go towards Ipswich now and think, you know, here we go, we are going to get into a decent amount of form now and pick up some wins? Or do you think this is another one of those, kind of like Millwall, where we've won it in spite of the stats saying that we lost the possession battle 60-40, we were outshot 8-21. And, you know, I mean, Paul Clement's quotes after the game kind of suggest that there was still a bit that needs to be done as well. He said that the issue for us is some of the mistakes defensively that have cost us being the wrong side of fine margins, and also in the games when we're under pressure. If we can tighten up defensively and be more solid and keep clean sheets, we'll begin to move up the table, because we've got a lot of quality going forward. And that defensive aspect, I think, it's still there. And luckily for us, Ipswich aren't a very good attacking team. So do you think at this stage next week we'll be able to, you know, be a bit more confident about exactly where the team is going, at least, and in terms of the relegation battle?
Well, Ipswich is going to be a very different task to what we had against Bristol City. Bristol City are the kind of team that play good football. They want to get forward, create chances, score some goals. And as you said, with the shot stats earlier, they really outshot us. They had a lot of pressure and probably had enough chances to win it, to be honest. So to a degree, we could count our lucky stars, I guess. But and when it's 2-2 in a game like that, Bristol City are going to push forward. They're going to try and get that winner. And that did give us that little bit more space to try and get at them and try and get our own third goal on the counter-attack, which obviously worked in the end. But you look at Ipswich Town, on the other hand, they're going to try and come here, keep things tight, nick a goal on the counter or from a set piece. And if they can do that, then they're probably going to sit back, keep things tight, make things difficult for us and really invite us onto them and try and get us to put the pressure on. And that's not really something that we're always particularly good at. I think back to the Bolton game a couple of months ago when they just nicked a goal in the second half and dropped back, defended very deep, and we couldn't break them down. So if Ipswich do that, if they get ahead in the game, then I can see us maybe not struggling, but really having a tough game against Ipswich.
It's weird with the Ipswich game. You think, oh, maybe there's going to be, you know, like a sort of like the Bolton game, sort of, you say, maybe a one or draw, 0-0. But there's something about Paul Clement's style of football at the moment that's completely inconducive to drawing games. We've drawn 5 of the 24 games under Paul Clement. I mean, why do you think that is? Do you think this is because we are so sort of mentally weak that the goals we score are kind of irrelevant in the general flow of the game? Or do you think that it's bad management, or maybe we're getting unlucky at key points, or we're failing to bounce back from going sort of 1-0 down or 2-1 down or something? Why? What's your take on why we just can't draw at the moment?
I don't know, to be honest. It's a weird one, but I guess looking on the other side of it, when we lose games, we tend to do it by one goal. I think this season we've only lost something like 2 league games by more than one goal. The 4-1 at West Brom and the 2-0 at Swansea City. So in all these other games, you think Norwich at home, Wednesday at home, QPR, Bolton, whatever, we're just getting edged out. Again, it's the defensive errors, just letting in sloppy goals. But then we don't have that amount of confidence to just get back into the game and nick a goal ourselves. And even if we do, we then concede another goal pretty quickly. You think of the second Norwich goal that came, I think, right after our equaliser, and obviously a very similar thing on Saturday with Bristol City. So it's certainly a mental problem at the moment, yeah.
Okay, so we'll be moving on then into Pub Chat and discussing the state of the Championship in a minute. Well, there's no news bites this week, because there's not too much going on around the club at the moment, apart from couple of academy results. The women and the women's academy both beat Bristol City on the same weekend as the men's first team, so that was a good nice little hat trick there for the Royals over the Robins. And also there's the Aston Villa under 23s hosted Reading under 23s, and we beat them 5-4 in a comeback late win. Bit of a roller coaster that one. Danny Loder scoring an absolute cracker, which I urge you to check out on the Tireless End Twitter. We'll make sure that's there for everyone to get the highlight of that. Danny Loder showing exactly what he's made of. But nonetheless, we'll be talking about the Championship in general in the next section.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So we are in early November and the state of the Championship is becoming a little bit clearer to a large extent. Although, you know, Wigan and Bolton at one point looked like they were going to be doing quite well, and now it's Norwich and Leeds, and Middlesbrough at one point looked like they're going to do quite well, and, you know, maybe now not so. And Sim, what's your take on how the Championship is building up at the moment and how it's looking? Is it kind of going pretty much as you expected it's going to go, or is it a bit of an odd year?
It's a really odd year. It's really tight, to be honest, at both ends of the pitch. I think you're always expecting one team to kind of emerge from the pack and start to pull away, whether it's something you kind of backed at the start of the season or a bit more of a surprise package. But it's really tight at both ends, to be honest. And if you take your eye off the ball for one weekend, you find another team kind of jumping up to the top of the table. I was shocked to see Norwich at the top of the table this week, and that came out of nowhere, because a couple of months ago they were kind of in mid-table, not really starting particularly quickly. But when you put a run of form together and you really kind of work out what your best team is and get on a bit of form, then you can really push up the table. I know that's something that Paul Clement has mentioned a couple of times, that you just need a couple of wins and then you're a lot higher up the table. But it is true. It does happen. And then certainly looking at the other end of the table, we're only a couple of points off 17th or so. So if we do get a win against Ipswich, then we can leapfrog a lot of teams. And it's, I guess that's encouraging from our point of view, that we're not getting cut adrift despite a really poor start. So that should be cause for positivity for the players, that if they can go out and get those points, it will pay off for them.
Yeah, I'm looking at the top of the table at the moment. It's Leeds and Norwich, the first teams to breach 30 points, although they've both, I mean, Leeds have only lost twice, but they've drawn quite a lot, and Norwich started quite slowly, lost four games. Do you think that this is kind of how it's going to be? Do you think Leeds, Norwich, Sheffield United, Middlesbrough, Derby and Nottingham Forest are in sixth at the moment? They're kind of the surprise team that's emerged out of nowhere, really. Do you think that's who you expect to be in and around the top towards the end of the season? I kind of thought at the start of the season, I certainly didn't see Norwich or Sheffield United getting too high. Middlesbrough with Tony Pulis, that's pretty standard that they're going to be quite difficult to beat. Obviously only conceded 8 goals, so they'll be high up there at the end of the year. Leeds are an interesting one, though, because I thought Leeds would be dropping away. I thought they would start strongly and then start to drop away maybe February, sort of March kind of time. But now I'm sort of thinking that if they are where they are by January, they'll probably just throw so much money at it that they might actually see it through.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's testament to someone like Bielsa, who can come in and really adapt very quickly to the Championship. I know people were kind of talking about whether his tactics would work or not, whether it'd be too ambitious for a Championship side to pull off. But to be fair to him, he's adapted very well. He's really pushing them on. And I think there's one clip that I saw on Twitter earlier that really kind of summed up great spirit in the Leeds side at the moment. There was one Wigan player breaking down the pitch, and about eight Leeds players swarmed him at one point just to snuff out the danger. And it's that kind of spirit that you need a manager to instill, and fair play to them. They've started really well and they've got a good belief about them. So that might see them go all the way this year. Norwich was a side that at the start of the season, I thought things would come together for Daniel Farke this season, but looking at how good they are at the moment, being up in second at the moment, that shocked even me, to be honest. You look at Middlesbrough, I think they're probably the safest bet to go the distance when they are defending so well and they've got someone as experienced as Tony Pulis at the helm. They're gonna grind out 1-0 wins. They're gonna grind out those tight results, and if they can just keep on doing that, then they're probably going to be in the top two.
And looking further down, you've got, I mean, Stoke and Villa are lodged in mid-table at the moment, which is a bit of an odd one. I thought those two, certainly I thought Stoke would be much higher than they are, and it looks like they're kind of picking up now under Gary Rowett with of 3 wins in their last 6, only one of those being a defeat. I think there's obviously a lot of time left. There's plenty of scope for teams as far down. You think Sheffield Wednesday are probably capable of it. I wouldn't say Reading necessarily are, but there is always that chance in the Championship that a team's going to come late on and break into the top 6. And I don't know who I'd probably pick at the moment, but someone like Villa or Stoke, and maybe even Wigan, who have a very good home record but have kind of gone off the boil a bit lately. You can't ever look at the table at this stage of season and think that those in the bottom half are doomed to bottom half football for the rest of the season, because teams put on good runs in here and it does happen.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen with Reading a couple of years ago, our ability to kind of shoot up the table quite late on. And some teams have managed that already. You look at Birmingham in 10th. They were kind of around the bottom 3 not too long ago, but they've really put some form together and started to push up the table. And you're probably going to see other teams do that as well. I know you mentioned Villa and Stoke. You can possibly see Villa having a bit of a bounce when Dean Smith really kind of gets them playing and really gets them on some form and get them going together. So potentially, but at the moment you can't predict it. It's certainly going to be a surprise that can come from somewhere, but you can't spot it at the moment.
One of the teams who have put on a decent run, and I suppose they lost on the weekend, so it kind of puts them back down a little bit, but QPR, one of the teams that I thought were going to really struggle this year, and it's a bit annoying that they've actually started to put some results together. So in that relegation battle, I suppose the teams in the relegation battle at the moment are pretty much the teams you'd expect. Is there anyone that you think is kind of, obviously Ipswich at the moment are kind of cut adrift. Is there anyone you think is going to be really struggling that's currently down there? You Rotherham, Millwall, Bolton, Preston and Hull are joining us in that sort of bottom section at the moment. And it seems like a lot of those teams are pretty much those with the least money, more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Even with Preston bringing in a lot of money with selling some good players like Cunningham and Hugill over the last, I think, year or so, they haven't reinvested it. And that's been the problem, really. Reading didn't invest a huge amount of money in the summer either, so maybe there's a bit of a theme there. I guess even with Rotherham kind of up in 18th, a few points off the bottom three, they might be able to kind of just about stay above water, but they don't have as big resources as other teams. They're not going to be able to strengthen in January as much as other sides are going to be able to. So maybe we'll see them kind of just gradually slip down the table. Maybe a similar thing with Wigan, but I know they've just got a new takeover, so perhaps they'll be able to strengthen quite a lot as well.
And my final point on this is, do you think that the way the Championship is at the moment, do you think it makes it a good league to be in? Because a lot of fans, when it gets to Reading, when they've been in the Premier League and, you know, getting relegated from the Premier League, a lot of fans say, oh, Championship football is a better place to be for a number of reasons, for the, you know, competitiveness, for the state of the games and the quality of the football is still quite high. Do you think that it is a good league to be in? Is it, you know, quite as much as it's cracked up to be? It's the competitiveness, I think, is being hand pushed back a little bit at the moment, given that the teams with money have a lot of money and the teams without any money, really, you know, there's a lot of stratification taking place in the finances of the Championship at the moment. Do you think that Reading being a Championship team for another 3-4 years is something that will be just about okay to deal with?
Yeah, I think it's a great league to be in. I know you, as you mentioned, there's some a big disparity financially between the top and the bottom of the table. Yeah. But you look at teams like Brentford, they've been able to compete at the top end of the table for the last couple of years by having a good plan, by investing wisely. And that's not really something you'd be able to kind of get away with in, say, the Premier League to the same extent, where there really is a top six. But I guess with having big Premier League sides coming down into the Championship and some fresher talent coming up from League One, it keeps things fresh. It really feels like a very different challenge every year, like anything could happen. And especially with big managers like Marcelo Bielsa coming in, it does keep things exciting. It keeps things fresh. And I guess even with rookie managers like Frank Lampard, Capstan with us a couple of years ago, of course, and John Terry probably going into management at some point. I know he's working with Dean Smith at the moment, but there's these little stories all across the division. I don't think there's such a massive gap between the top end of the table and the bottom end of the table that it's kind of not competitive. You can still see a team in the bottom three beating a team at the top end of the table. It's a great league.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good place to be in at the moment. Especially with the Premier League's money, it can only really go so far, and therefore it does trickle down, or it's starting to trickle down a little bit more than it used to, I think, and that's going to only benefit clubs like Reading and the Championship. You're not seeing teams go into administration and all that sort of stuff at the moment, and that's kind of the big worry with being in the Championship for me, is can you sustain a club that's, you know, you can't really make money in the Championship without selling players to the league above, and hopefully Reading with their academy and stuff are going to be able to find a way to navigate through that. So if anyone has any thoughts on the Championship, how it's going, and of course anything Reading and Tarlis simulated, please get them in to the Twitter, to the Facebook and to the email, thetarlisend@gmail.com, as we'll always discuss them on the podcast. And next up we'll be doing exactly that with the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Couple questions this week. The first from Shane on Twitter, simply saying, so we won, how? Which I think is a pretty nice way of summing up how the state of affairs is at the moment, when Reading beat Bristol City and the fans don't really know how to respond to it. But Dave Delarivier sent in an email to us which says, hi guys, I know you don't get much in the mailbag when we win, so I thought I'd drop you a line. Really enjoyed Saturday's game. Great spirit from both the team and the fans, and nice to shut up the noisy Bristol support. Really hoping the team can string together a few back-to-back wins now. Lots of positives. Pleased to see the academy boy Andy Winham-Hotter get his chance to start. Kelly taking a chance and it pays off. Mo Barrow back in the team. He's not 100%, but we'll give him time. And Chris Gunter looking good in his left wing cameo. It's these performances that make you want to come back for more. Come on, your arse, and keep up the good work. Thank you very much for that one, Dave. And Chris Gunter's little cameo there, so it's an interesting one to pick up on. He's basically gone from being a first-team regular now to a bit of a off-the-bench, put in wherever.
Yeah, it's testament to, I guess, Yeardom and Blackett at the moment. They're playing well enough to keep him out of the side. Blackett has improved a lot this season under Paul Clement, and Andy Yeardom has had a really good start to life at Reading as well, coming in from Barnsley on a free. And we've needed that competition for quite a while, to be honest, at fullback. I know last season we were kind of having to deal with Gunter at left back and Bakuna at right back for a lot of the season, which really held us back for a lot of the season. But we've got some more depth at the moment. I know there's a couple of players injured, but it is good to have someone like Gunter not necessarily guaranteed to be in the side every week. And hopefully, if we do have need for him to come back into the team more regularly, then he'll be that little bit more motivated, that little bit more driven to up his own performances because of that competition.
Yeah, I think he's one of those that's just going to have to... He's useful to have in the squad. You certainly can't deny that Chris Gunter is going to be an asset to a squad over the course of a season, whether he starts every game or not. If he's not, then I'm not going to be too upset. And if he is, then at least you know what you're going to get. Ben Greenwood says... It seems that some individuals have improved under Clement, Bakuna, Blackett, Aloy. Yet collectively, can you see a difference to the end of the Stam era? I'd say at least we can score goals now. I like Clement as a person and hope he can get some more consistency from this team. I think Bakuna is a really interesting one to pick up there, but I thought over the weekend he's certainly improved, and I think he's benefited a lot from having consistency in his role, because Stam was moving him, you know, full-back, left-back, right-back, centre-mid, central-defensive-mid. He's playing a very consistent role at the moment, Bakuna, which is suiting us quite a lot. And compared to the Stam era, the sort of thing, as you say, we can score goals now. I think we're suffering from the same thing that we had under Stam, is that if we played defensively and we focused on defence, then we had no attack whatsoever. And as we're seeing in the sort of Millwall and Bristol City games, if we're playing attacking football, there is no defence whatsoever. So I think that was the case in the Stam and the Clement teams that we're seeing at the moment. And at the moment, Sim, we're in the attacking mode and we're conceding a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of almost feels like we're always having to react to what the other team are doing. We're not able to really kind of impose ourselves on a game, really control it, create a lot of chances and score. I know that's kind of a bit grand for a team threatened with relegation to be aiming for, but it's something you do need to be working towards in the long term. You do need to have a good control of a game whenever you can. That's why I was worried by the Millwall game a couple of weeks ago, when we really had to kind of hold on for a lot of it and just let balls come into our box and just deal with it. Similar thing with the Bristol City game, when we're under a lot of pressure, kind of relentless for a lot of the game, just having to deal with it. And even on the counter, it kind of felt a little bit half-hearted, a little bit inconsistent, not the kind of thing we've had in previous years, unfortunately. But hopefully when we put a couple of performances together, a couple of wins together, hopefully we can get a bit more confidence, a little bit more cohesion to our overall play.
Do you think that Clement's working with individuals is going well? I think there's probably a number of players, while you could say that these players have improved, as Ben said, and I think he's right, there are probably a number of individuals who have stuttered in their development and who haven't kicked on in any sense. I think John Swift has completely stuttered under Clement. I think you could probably say Gunter is another one who obviously isn't in the team at the moment. I'm not entirely sure Liam Kelly's getting better as a footballer as we go forward. Mark McNulty hasn't come in and, you know, done too much, to say the least, really. And do you think that he is improving players, or do you think that it's kind of as one improves, one decreases in talent?
I think it's natural that whenever a new manager comes in, some players are going to respond really well to it, and others aren't going to do quite so well. You can look at people like Ilori, Bakuna, Blackett, who've done really well from him coming in. Yakumate as well, another good example of someone who's done really well under him. But when there's a change in approach from the manager, when there's a change in tactics, things like that, some players aren't going to do so well. Modu Barrow as well doesn't seem to get on with Clement particularly well. I know he was out of the team for a couple of weeks for some kind of disciplinary problem. So he's naturally not going to play as well as under Yap Stam, who seemed to have a lot more faith in him, seemed to kind of let him off the leash a lot more. But that's the kind of thing that kind of gets ironed out in the long term. It's not something that you can just deal with overnight. Those players are going to either have to really buck up their ideas and prove to Clement why he should be starting them in the team, or they will eventually just leave the club.
Well, leaving the club is certainly something that's been a bit difficult to do for a lot of Reading players. I think Clement has said before that he feels like he has a big squad that he quite likes to trim down a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, if people don't want to sign your players and you've given them long contracts, then it's hard to get them out the door. The other question we got this week, this for the mailbag, coming from Ryan, who asks, should O'Shea be starting more often? And, I mean, we've kind of touched on this one already, but do you think O'Shea moving forward, Ipswich at the very least, do you think he'll start against Ipswich?
Yeah, I think he should do. Just keep that consistency going between him and Moore, let him build a partnership. It's not going to come overnight, but hopefully with a run of games they can get an understanding, they can just work on that partnership, and hopefully that experience will start to pay off for us. Having John O'Shea's know-how could hopefully see us over the line and just edges towards a couple more points than we have been guessing.
Yeah, I think he should probably be starting on a Saturday. It's just a case of maybe, as I say, the Saturday-Tuesday games will be a bit difficult for him, but on Saturday, we've got an international break after. You just want to have as much consistency as possible in defence, I think, at the end of the day, and hopefully O'Shea can provide that. So we'll be rounding off the show in the next section, any other business, and talking about that Ipswich game that comes up on the 10th of November.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
3 p.m. at the Mad Stad, Saturday, November 10th. Be there. Well, most people probably won't be there because that's kind of how it goes these days with wedding attendances. But please be there. I'll try and get down myself. I'm sure Sim will be as well for Ipswich, the classic case of hosting the bottom of the table team who have just changed their manager and who, well, let's face it, have had an absolutely nightmarish start to the season. And Sim, I find it quite, maybe this weekend is going to be quite interesting, because last season when we hosted Ipswich, it was the absolute nexus of all that was bad with the team last season. It really summed up exactly what we hated about Reading for certain points of last season, or for large parts of last season. And yet, coming up to this weekend, the roles might be completely reversed.
Well, it's a weird one, really, because it's kind of similar to last season in the sense that we're going into a home game against Ipswich thinking we really should be winning it. Having that kind of that real confidence that we just need to turn up, essentially, and just put in a good performance and we should be able to win it. It's a little bit different in the sense that last season it was a bit of a dead rubber for Ipswich, who had already kind of secured their championship safety and were just in mid-table by the time that it came around to us playing them. But we do risk repeating that complacency of just assuming that if we turn up and do what we should do, then we'll get the win. But I do just worry that if we are a bit too complacent, if we don't do ourselves justice and really kind of get down to the nitty-gritty of the game, we could end up, say, leaking a stupid goal and just letting Ipswich get back behind the ball and really protect that lead. And that's something that we have struggled to break down before. Go back to the Bolton game that I mentioned earlier as a match where we really struggled when a team just nicked a goal, sat back and just made things difficult for us. And if we let Ipswich dictate the game in that kind of way, then it could be difficult for us.
That Bolton game really is one that I think we need to learn a lot from, because Ipswich, I mean, they're the second lowest scorers in the league, which is good given our defence, but the reality is that Paul Lambert has just taken over. They're not going to come with any fireworks. They're going to have had a solid week of training. Drew at home to Preston, who had a man sent off on the weekend, so the confidence level shouldn't be particularly high in them. But that week in training, I think, is going to be really important for Ipswich to just nail their defence, basically. He's almost certainly going to start from the defence and work his way forward and come sit in, try and get a point and play off the counter, as you say. And that makes probably not for a very entertaining game.
No, absolutely. And when we're given the onus of just having to keep the ball a lot and create things ourselves, dominate possession and trying to carve open another side, we struggle to do that. We have done for years, even before the famously dull Yap Stam home performances. But it's something we're going to have to learn from. We're going to have to find a way of adapting too, and that could mean bringing John Swift back into the side, perhaps, for a bit more creativity, or hoping that Modu Barrow can up his game after Saturday and give us a bit more pace and width to stretch Ipswich. But yeah, something that Paul Clement has to deal with, and could be particularly difficult if Yaku Mato's injured, because I know he came off with an ankle injury. So if he is, then that's our two main strikers out, with him and Bodvarsson, which, yeah, we will struggle with if we don't have either of them in the side.
I would say my advice to Paul Clement is, in terms of picking the team, is just leave it alone and try and have as much as you can an unchanged 11 from the one that started against Bristol City. Because it might not even be my favourite 11 of players that did start, but he tinkers so much and moves things around. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if like a Luko came back in and Barrow was out, or if you maybe change the goalkeeper again, give it the chance, maybe Yakola's going to be fit to play. But hopefully he'll just sit there and say, you know what, go out there and play, not exactly as you did last time out, but go out there and take the same shape and do the roles that you know what to do with. And that means Renom Hotta starting, it means Baldock starting out wide again, and just trying to keep it a bit simple in that aspect, and letting the players know that they have focus on other things rather than focusing on the tactical side of things, and hopefully they'll be a bit more natural off that.
Yeah, I think, to be fair to Paul Clement, he's probably wanted to keep the same side a lot more than he has done in the end, to be honest, because we have had a lot of injuries, had a lot of just random injuries just popping up here and there whenever we've wanted to keep the same side. We haven't been able to. You look at next week, we may be forced into a change with Yaku Mate if he's injured, maybe have to come out of the side, Ezra Talahi coming out, Bodvarsson coming out, problems all across the side. So yeah, it's frustrating that we can't put out the same side over a couple of weeks, but it's difficult to do that if players are just keeping on getting randomly injured.
Let's go into the predictions then to round off the show, and of course your optimism was well rewarded with a point in the prediction league on a Saturday afternoon. You were the only person who said Reading were going to beat Bristol out of the quite large table that we have at the moment. A couple of draws, I think Ollie and Dan both went for a draw. Everyone else went Bristol City win, and you've been rewarded. Moved up to 9 points now in this kind of nice little mid-table battle that we've got going on, with Wim quite clear out in front. So well done on your point, and is that going to be carried on for another win against Ipswich?
Thank you very much. Optimism pays off. Not a usual thing for a Reading fan to say, but there you go. I am going to say that the game against Ipswich, I have no idea, to be honest. When I try and predict a game, I usually kind of look back to another match and kind of compare it to that. I know I've talked about the Bolton game a couple of times, and I'm kind of worried that Ipswich are going to nick a goal and just make it a 1-0. It always counts on what team we manage to put out, who is injured and who isn't. So it's, yeah, predicting a running score is like just pulling teeth at the moment. I am going to, at this early stage, I am going to go with a 1-1 draw.
Okay, 1-1 draw you're going with, and I'm going to go with a 3-1 Reading victory. And I think whether that stays 3-1 or drops down to maybe 1-0 or maybe 2-1 depends on how I see Ipswich settling up. And as I've said, I think they're going to come and sit in, but maybe they won't be very good at it. It's kind of what I'm thinking with saying 3-1. And Paul Lambert, yes, he's an okay manager. He's been a bit up and down in his career so far, but There's no saying that he's going to nail its first time, and this Reading team is capable of scoring goals. If we can score a couple early on, we'll certainly draw Ipswich out. And I don't know what you think about this, I certainly think that Ipswich will score against us, because we just don't really seem to have that defensive stability to deny even the worst of scores.
I can see them maybe nicking one, but unless they have a particularly good game like in April, I can't see them getting more than one, to be honest. Paul Lambert isn't the best manager for kind of creating free-flowing football. I think he usually is about keeping a team compact, keeping them solid, and then nicking something on the counter or from a set piece. So at this early stage of his time at Ipswich, I can't imagine him trying to kind of get them playing that kind of really good attacking football. Might nick one or two, but I can't see them getting too many goals, to be honest. Which will probably come back to Bayern. We'll probably lose 5-1 just to spite my prediction.
Expansive Pep Guardiola-esque football from Paul Lambert at Ipswich isn't quite the thing that I'm expecting to see, but I'm open. Always open to new things, and maybe that's exactly what Ipswich are going to do. And if they do that, then almost fair play to them, because I don't think anyone's predicting them to do that. So that wraps us up this show then. We'll be back on Thursday with Ollie's weekend preview, and then we'll have a show on maybe the Monday or Tuesday after the Ipswich game, probably the Tuesday, because we'll have a week off after that with the international break. So that's when we'll be back in your ears. Thank you everyone for joining us, and thank you Sim for popping on Sunday night to discuss Reading.
Anytime.
And now we go into that lovely period the week after the win, knowing that we play the bottom of the table team at home at the weekend upcoming. And it's just so easy, isn't it? We'll just turn up, beat Ipswich, claim some more points, be out the relegation zone, and we'll be looking up, straight up and not down at all on next Saturday evening, with some nice lovely points and Paul Clements security all in the bag. That's how football works, right? Come on, you arse.
Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems it's on.